Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. Today, we're talking about Afterglow, world leader style. We all remember when Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky's choice of attire and a verbal lashing delivered to him by Vice President J.D. Vance was front page news. But this week, when Zelensky sat down with President Donald Trump, that was in the rearview mirror. Zelensky and Trump were all smiles when they gathered after Trump met with Russian leader Vladimir Putin for peace talks. The genial atmosphere had many media outlets reporting that he'd learned the ropes of working with Trump. And, God love him, those ropes included what he wore and the number of times he offered thanks. Because of that, the meeting between President Trump, Ukrainian President Zelensky, and other European leaders at the Oval Office this week had a different tone compared to their previous meeting in February. But the outcome? That's a mystery. While there are signs that progress was made during this meeting, a lasting peace in Ukraine is still far away. Trump admitted the conflict was a tough one to solve and conceded it was possible the Russian president was not interested in ending hostilities. "We're going to find out about President Putin in the next couple of weeks," he said this week. "It's possible that he doesn't want to make a deal." Beth Noble, former CBS News Moscow bureau chief and journalism professor at Fordham University, joined KCBS Radio in the Bay Area to break it down.
"We don't know exactly what Presidents Putin and Trump talked about when they met in Alaska last week. We don't know how much this came up. Certainly, there have been signs just in the last day from the Russian Foreign Ministry that they do not want NATO troops on the ground in Ukraine. I mean, one of the reasons this whole war happened is because Vladimir Putin doesn't want NATO to expand anymore into Ukraine and be, you know, right on his southern flank. So this is going to be a really, really complicated issue. And it's good that there are going to be some specialists sitting down to try to hammer out the details, because the details here are going to matter a lot.
One final thing. In the previous meeting you alluded to, it seemed like Vice President J.D. Vance was the pit bull in the room. Yesterday, silence.
Yeah, he even smiled at President Zelensky. I don't know if Saturday Night Live isn't back on the air yet, but if they were, they had a field day after that February meeting. They wouldn't have a lot to parody this week, and maybe it's good for world peace that the meetings are going better now, that the European and Ukrainian leaders have learned how to work with President Trump, because President Trump is certainly trying to play a role here in bringing peace to Ukraine. And you know, the Russians attacked them again overnight with missiles and drones. It's a terrible situation, and I think a lot of people want it to end. We just don't really know if Vladimir Putin is one of them, because he's getting a lot of good things in his own country from making people rally around the flag during this war.
There are still many open questions about what a potential security force in Ukraine would look like, including whether it would involve U.S. support through means like aircraft, command and control, or intelligence sharing. Here's KCBS with more.
President Trump this morning has confirmed that U.S. troops will not be part of a security force on the ground in Ukraine after hostilities ceased there. Yesterday, he didn't rule it out. So let's take a deeper dive into it. We're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Jeff McCausland, CBS News military analyst. And Jeff, thanks for joining us. It seemed kind of strange that the president wouldn't say whether or not yesterday that whether there would be U.S. boots on the ground there.
Yeah, it did seem a bit strange, and I was surprised that he seemed at least inclined to consider it, Eric. But now I think he has clarified it. There would be no U.S. troops on the ground. But again, our European allies are going to want, I think, some U.S. involvement. The British have always talked about that they would provide forces, for example, want an American backstop. But what might that American backstop be? Could be aircraft, could be command and control, could be logistics. Certainly it'll be continued providing of intelligence on Russian forces as part of that overall force. And then, of course, the purpose of the force is also a concern. Is that a force that's going to be physically of a size where it could deter a Russian aggression? Or is it a peacekeeping force that's sort of there as a tripwire that would bring in those other countries should Russia violate the terms of any particular agreement? So there's a lot to do in terms of clarifying what these security guarantees might look like. Obviously critical for Ukraine, if they're going to give up territory, how do they know that the Russians will stand by this agreement since the Russians have violated several over the last 20 years or more? And furthermore, the Ukrainians were there, I think, yesterday because they support Ukrainian security. This, for them, is also European security. And how can we be assured, absent a security force of some means, that Russia would not continue its aggression beyond Ukraine, perhaps threatening a NATO partner?
Yeah, I can't imagine, though, that President Putin would want any NATO troops on the ground between him and Ukraine.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why I think part of our problem is we talk about meetings with Putin and Zelensky and trilateral meetings and security guarantees. We need to get a greater clarity on the Russian position. You know, there seems to be some dispute now on whether or not Mr. Putin would accept, as you suggest, any NATO troops from any partner being present on Ukrainian soil, even if they were there not under a NATO flag, because obviously if it was under a NATO flag, you could say it was tacit membership for Ukraine into NATO, something the Russians have been totally opposed to. And furthermore, there are a number of things that Putin has alluded to and talked about that still have to be clarified as well. One is, what's his position on Ukrainian forces? His steadfast position since the onset of these hostilities is the conclusion would include such things as not only not joining NATO, but that Ukraine would reduce its military forces to less than 85,000, would end all military aid to Ukraine, and would eliminate the current government and bring in a new government. So as we talk about so-called land swaps and we talk about security guarantees, we need to get a clear bit of clarity on exactly what all this Russian position is if we're going to negotiate, I think, in good faith.
And we have watched the goalposts move in regards to that over the past 3 years.
We certainly have. Though I have to say the Russians have been pretty consistent about demanding this territory that they now occupy and more, and those things I just mentioned in terms of the ending of the Zelensky government and no admission to NATO. And they've continually talked about that. Well, we've suggested, well, they might compromise. I've seen no, frankly, no reason to believe the Russians are willing to compromise on any of those things. I mean, witness his final remark, see Putin in Alaska. And he began his remarks by saying the root causes of this war have got to be addressed before we get a settlement. Well, for him, that's the root causes of the war and the rolling back of NATO. What he wants to do is he really wants to move things back to where it was prior to the end of the Cold War, where he thinks Russia ended up losing in a bad position. He wants that reasserting of Russian sovereignty, power, and control on the European landmass and a redo of European security architecture.
So there's one question a lot of pundits asked, and that is, who won in the much-ballyhooed Alaskan summit between Trump and Putin? Note that Putin is a former KGB officer who came upon the mean streets of the former Soviet Union, so he's no slouch when it comes to getting tough. Trump, on the other hand, prides himself on negotiating tactics and bargaining skills honed for decades at the helm of a billion-dollar development business. Colonel Jeff McCaslin, CBS military analyst, discussed it on the Newell Norman Show.
Colonel, very little information has leaked out other than the Russians want the Donbass, which you said that's what they wanted, and the U.S. may be willing to provide security guarantees. We're not sure what that means. I thought Ukraine had one already prior to the invasion in 2014. So where are we? And now today, European leaders visiting with Zelensky and the president in D.C. Your thoughts?
Well, where we are is, of course, coming out of this Alaskan summit. And of course, and what we saw in Alaska, I thought, was a major pivot by President Trump from what his going in position was to what his coming out position was. If one said who was successful at that particular summit, I'd say you'd have to say Mr. Putin was. And that's judging by the goals that both went in for. Trump at the onset said he was going to insist on an immediate ceasefire and then negotiations on a final settlement. And if the Russians didn't agree with that, there would be severe consequences. And he talked about increased tariffs and sanctions on the Russians. He talked about secondary sanctions on countries like India and China that would buy an awful lot of oil and underwrite the cost of the war in Ukraine. Well, none of that happened, and he came out of it more aligned with Mr. Putin in saying, well, I've decided what we need to do is go to an immediate final settlement, which the Russians have always talked about in the past. And coming out of the meeting, of course, in the aftermath, there was no press conference, and you're right, Newell was pretty opaque at the end. But Mr. Putin gave, I thought, a pretty important speech in which he talked about what he talked about to go in with, that the root causes have to be addressed. That's what the Russians have said since this war began. For them, the root causes really are NATO has to do a rollback. Ukraine can't join NATO. The Ukrainians have to give up these four provinces plus Ukraine. Ukrainian military has to be reduced to 85,000, a new government in Ukraine, and Ukraine has to agree that Russian is the official language of Ukraine. It's kind of a surrender. But in essence, they go away with that still pretty much intact, so I think they probably were drinking a lot of vodka on the way back to Moscow.
So there's been a lot of chatter about this security guarantee being something very similar to the Article 5 guarantee if you're a participating NATO member. If you would, remind the audience of this alleged guarantee that we had prior to the invasion in 2014 of Crimea. I thought there was one that everyone had agreed to. It didn't seem to come to the forefront.
Well, that's exactly right. But and what this goes back to, of course, is the NATO guarantee, Article 5, applies to NATO members, and Ukraine is not a NATO member. And that's very true. But there have been several guarantees by the Russians. Let's begin at the beginning. In 1991, when all the republics of the Soviet Union would meet in Tashkent, they would sign an agreement whereby they would become independent and they would recognize each other's borders. And the Russian Federation recognized the border of Ukraine in 1991, which included Crimea as part of Ukraine. Then in 1991 also, the Ukrainians would announce the transfer of nuclear weapons that were on the soil of Ukraine to the Russian Federation. And in return, this is called the Budapest Memorandum. In return, the United States, Russian Federation, and Great Britain guaranteed the sovereignty of Ukraine. Well, in 2014, when the Russians would invade Crimea, that didn't mean a great deal. But we have to put that, I think, a little bit in a context. And don't forget, Ukraine was in the midst of a revolution and near civil war at that time. The leader of Ukraine, who was in many ways a Russian puppet, had opposed efforts to move Ukraine closer to the European Union. That had resulted in mass social unrest in Kyiv. He fled the country, and amidst all that unrest, the Russians would, in fact, invade and occupy Crimea with no particular casualties, and they would also begin a civil war in the Donbas region, and basically that would be frozen in another agreement called the Minsk Accords in 2014, which was supposed to lead to negotiations on a final settlement. And, of course, once again in 2022, that was violated with the former. So there have been several in the past. The security guarantee has always been fundamental to the Ukrainians because of that history. Their belief is us transferring territory to the Russians doesn't mean much. It's a temporary solution. We've seen this movie before, and that would just set the stage for them to invade again. And furthermore, if they gave up the territory the Russians demand that they still occupy, they would compromise what is their primary defensive belt and put them in a militarily very inferior position to defend themselves. So that's why they want some kind of a security guarantee. Well, joining NATO would be a security guarantee, but we've taken that off the table. So it seems to be now being discussed as some kind of a security guarantee of the so-called coalition of the willing. That would include, based on their presence today at least, I would think their principal European allies, Brits, Germans, French, Italians. But the real question is, what would be the participation of the United States? Mr. Trump has had, you know, some rather vague comments about accepting some kind of security guarantee, but no idea what that means for the United States. Does that mean American soldiers in Ukraine? That mean the United States provides air cover, logistics, command and control? The real, you know, details are not unimportant in this particular regard. So what's odd, Newell, in a way, is we're very clear about what Vladimir Putin wants. He's made that clear. He reiterated that in Alaska. What we're unclear about is what Donald Trump wants and what Donald Trump's willing to accept.
Is there the possibility of some type of military base of the coalition of the willing being inside the territorial boundaries of Ukraine?
It's that certainly
would be
possible.
The most overt security guarantee one could offer, right?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, you could end up in a ceasefire, or rather, and here the terms are not unimportant, an armistice. You know, we're in an armistice in Korea that has lasted now for some 70 years plus. U.S. forces have been in Korea to enforce that armistice for 70 plus years. So could you imagine something like that on the border to be determined between Ukraine and Russia? Perhaps. That would be, I think, something that would be of interest to the Ukrainians because, again, based on the history I described, they're obviously skeptical about, you know, things that are said that are not backed up by physical forces on the ground that underscore the deterrence value of those security guarantees to prevent or deter the Russians from future aggression.
Here's Zelensky and Trump themselves discussing what happened from the White House and analysis from Rich Zaoli about what to expect next.
Security guarantees, bringing peace back and all our people, not only warriors, first of all, warriors and all the civilians, journalists, a lot of people in prison. So we need them back. And guarantees which will work for the years, we spoke about it. And I showed the president a lot of details on the battlefield, on the map. Thank you so much. Thank you for the map, by the way.
Good map.
It was great. Yeah. I'm thinking how to take it back.
We'll get you.
No. I think that we had constructive, specific meeting, and I'm very thankful to all the leaders who are here, and you help a lot, and so we are happy that we have such big unity today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I think you'll see that President Putin really would like to do something else. I think when we set that up, when we do, I think it's going to be when, not if. I think you're going to see some very really positive moves. I know there's over 1,000 prisoners, and I know they're going to release them. Maybe they're going to release them very soon, like immediately, which I think is great. But we will. We're going to set that up today after this meeting. So very good and great remarks. I appreciate it. Mark, as head of NATO, maybe you could say a few words. Please.
Yes, I will be very brief. I really want to thank you, President of the United States, dear Donald, for the fact that you, as I said before, broke the deadlock. Basically, with President Putin by starting that dialogue. And I think it was in February that you had the first phone call. And from there, we are now where we are today. And that is, I think, if we play this well, we could end this. And we have to end this. We have to stop the killing. We have to stop the destruction of Ukraine's infrastructure. It is a terrible war. So I'm really excited. And let's make the best out of today and make sure that from today onwards, we get this thing to an end as soon as possible. I really want to thank you for your leadership, what you are doing for Volodymyr, but of course also all the European colleagues. It is really crucial. And the fact that you have said, I'm willing to participate in the security guarantees is a big step. It's really a breakthrough, and it makes all the difference. So also thank you for that.
Well, NATO also has agreed from 2% to 5%, which is something that is a massive amount of money. And it's 2% that wasn't always paid to 5% that is paid. That's a big difference. And so we appreciate that. That was a great move. And we'll see. And in a certain period of time, not very far from now, a week or 2 weeks, we're going to know whether or not we're going to solve this, or is this horrible fighting going to continue? We'll do our best to get it ended. And I believe you have two willing parties, and usually that's good news, but two willing parties that want to make a deal. And we'll journey together, and we'll go over, and we'll see if it can be done. And it's possible it might not be able to be done. On the other hand, it's possible it will, and we're going to save thousands and thousands of lives a week. And so it's something we really have to do. And or at least we have to give it our best. It's all you can do. You can give it your best. But I think we may have a very good outcome. But I want to thank the media has been actually very fair, generally speaking, very fair. I think it's important that they're fair because this is a very important subject. We have to get it ended. And so that's all we ask for is fairness with the media. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Big deal at the White House today. Zelensky meeting with the president. and wearing a suit, which is shocking. And I actually tweeted out today, not since the judge and my cousin Vinny has anyone been so happy to see someone show up in a suit. The president remarked on that today. Reporters remarked on that today, too. But Zelensky rocking a black suit. I don't know if there's a tie involved. It was hard to tell. I don't think there was a tie. But either way, it's a big progress for him. But the president talking about progress today with Zelensky. You know, and he made a comment. He said, I could solve this war. I could bring peace. And then the media would write that it was terrible for the world. Somebody even asked the question today, you know, does the media want to see this thing come to an end? You know, all I kept thinking of as I see the president meeting with these world leaders is I think you'd have to be just the most anti-Trump person in the world to think that if he's able to achieve peace here, yeah, he deserves a Nobel Peace Prize. Absolutely, he does. 100%. I mean, if he's able to bring about peace with Ukraine and Russia, if he's able to end this war and bring Europe together and bring a peace deal, hell yeah, you give the guy the Nobel Peace Prize. Absolutely. And it solidifies his place in history as a peacemaker, as a deal maker, as a guy who ended a war that the previous administration was just sending money in that war. Nonstop cash. Nonstop cashish. So the president also talked about whether or not we need a ceasefire. All right. And this is where cue up cut number four here. The issue of a ceasefire or just ending the war. Now, look, the problem of the ceasefire, and this is why it's more complex, is that a ceasefire theoretically gives Russia more time to rebuild their forces and rebuild their conscripts on the front lines. I asked Dr. Coates about this on Friday when we were together, and she said, you know, Putin's emptying his prisons. He's giving bonuses to people. He's determined to get as many people on the front lines as possible. If there's a ceasefire, it sounds great, right? I mean, it sounds great. You go, oh, ceasefire. That's wonderful. But if there's a ceasefire, which ends up in then there's more fighting, you haven't necessarily achieved anything. You've gotten good headlines, but now you've gotten to the point where Russia could theoretically come out of it even stronger and then goes back in a stronger position. Ukraine may not be in the same boat. So that's the question. Cut number four.
I don't think you need a ceasefire. You know, if you look at the six deals that I settled this year, they were all at war. I didn't do any ceasefires. And I know that it might be good to have, but I can also understand strategically why, well, you know, one country or the other wouldn't want it. You have a ceasefire and they rebuild and rebuild and rebuild. And, you know, maybe they don't want that. But if you look at the six deals that we made peace and you know, long-term, long-running wars, I didn't do any ceasefires. Would I like? I like the concept. You know, I like the concept of a ceasefire for one reason, because you'd stop killing people immediately, as opposed to in 2 weeks or 1 week or whatever it takes. But we can work a deal where we're working on a peace deal while they're fighting. They have to fight. I wish they could stop. I'd like them to stop. But strategically, that could be a disadvantage for one side or the other. But all of these deals I made without even the mention of the words ceasefire.
Okay. Now, the other question is, what happens? How does Ukraine get the money or weapons to be able to keep fighting in this war? And Peter Ducey asked the president that question today. And are we just going to be giving them money? And are we just going to be giving them weapons? And this is what the president said to that.
So, President Trump, how much more is the United States willing to give Ukraine? And President Zelensky, how much more do you want?
Well, I'll start off just by saying we're not giving anything now. We're selling weapons. This is something before, I guess the number is well over $300 billion. That was under Joe Biden, a corrupt politician, not a smart man, never was. By the way, go back 40 years. He was not a smart man 40 years ago either. But now he's in particular bad. This was done by a corrupt administration that shouldn't have been in. And frankly, if the right results of the election were given, if I were president, this war would have never taken place. And he would have been very happy, because he would have liked to have seen. I mean, they went through hell. He went through hell. this war would have never happened. And the people that were killed, a couple of million people, a lot of people with soldiers and everything else, and the people that have been displaced and forced into other areas and other countries because of what's happened, none of that would have happened. And
so we're not going to be giving weapons. We're going to be selling weapons. And that's what the president said is going to be different here. And look, the corruption thing on Joe Biden, you know, and this is what I mean. If everything had remained the same, if nothing had changed, so if Biden was still president, or at least his people were still running the country and his pudding brain was pretending like he was president, or if Kamala Harris had won the election, Ukraine would just be getting money. Ukraine would just be getting weapons. The military-industrial complex would be happy, but there would not be a meeting in the White House today. There would not be efforts to have either A, a ceasefire, or B, just an end to the war. Because too many people were making money off this thing. There never was an effort to try to end this thing.
So Rich Zeoli says that Trump deserves the Nobel Peace Prize if and when he can stop the war in Ukraine. But here's a different perspective from another conservative. Tara Servatius at WORD Radio is concerned that Trump's efforts will spark a MAGA civil war amongst the president's base here in the good old U.S. of A. Here's Tara with more.
Steve Bannon, longtime advisor to Donald Trump, put him in the White House. Incredible campaign that he ran yesterday, saying to Trump, don't do it. Don't agree to put troops on the ground as part of a security guarantee.
You're going to stick American boys and girls in the middle of that? No.
Yeah, no. Mm-mm. No. And that's why I was so confused, because the Euroweenies were just falling all over themselves, just slobbering all over Trump. So excited. So glad you were able to do this. What we don't know is what that security guarantee by the U.S. looks like. And folks, just to understand the background here, because I've been on it for a very long time, the foremost goal of the globalist left is World War III with Russia. It is. And the fact they're this excited when just 3 weeks ago they were vowing to fight on without us tells me this ain't good.
Here is the war we got to win is right here in this country. And it's in Washington, D.C. It's going to be in New York City. It's in Chicago. It's in Los Angeles, California. That's the war that we got to be focused on. That's the war. I want to give a security guarantee to the folk, the citizens of the United States on these invaders right now. That's the security guarantee I want. If we don't take care of that, we're not going to have a country. Yes, we have closed the border miraculously. President Trump put the troops into Washington, D.C., already a massive change. When Ursula shows up today, this is her problem. Who invited you? Why are you showing up at the White House? Who are you guys? And Maloney, how do you have the chutzpah to show up? You haven't stepped up to the plate to even the most minimum requirements that you guys committed to 10 years ago. You're not close to the 2%, and you ain't going to get close to the 2%, because your country would turf you out in a second if you stopped spending on social programs and letting them have the month of August off. By the way, they're watching this from their vacation places because they ain't working. Are you working this week? Are you taking the entire month of August off? Are you taking 5 or 6 weeks off? No. Do you retire at 50? No. Do you have full medical care? No. Do you get the free college? No. You get nothing the Europeans get. You know why? Because you're underwriting the security. And now we're going to add, Ukraine.
Yeah. Bannon continued.
We want to be supportive. Remember, we're supportive of this. But here's the situation, is that these Europeans can't be trusted. And the mainstream media is pushing you to do this. All the corporate interests, all the war, the arms manufacturers, big tech, they all want this. You know why? Their kids are not going to be when you hear security guarantee. You know what you do? You look at the table of your sons and daughters. You look at those grandchildren. That's a security guarantee. What's a security guarantee in Korea? Combat troops. What's a security guarantee in Germany? Combat troops. They want your blood and they want your treasure, yours. Are you at the table? They want yours.
Yesterday, Zelensky sounded like he never has before. We don't have all the details of this. So excited, praising Trump up and down. I went, something's wrong. Something is wrong. And then I figured it out. He thinks we are going to defend him from Russia.
So security guarantees. And I showed the president we are happy that we have such big unity today. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
I wasn't the only one asking questions yesterday. And look, I want to get this taken care of. And maybe that's something Trump has put on the table but doesn't mean to honor. But even Charlie Kirk yesterday was telling Matt Whitaker, who's the NATO ambassador, this is not going to fly in the magosphere. This is not going to fly in the pro-Trump universe. We love Trump. We love what he's trying to do. We're in awe of how far he's gotten. But no, we're not backed. No, we are not going to fight and die for Vladimir Zelensky, potentially.
The perspective of my audience and for me is we don't want America involved at all. We think this is long past exhausted and tired. And I think the president's perspective has been amazing, which is defy the national security establishment and the mainstream media and sit down and work this thing out. Today, let me tell you where our perspective is. And you're the ambassador to NATO, and so you have to be very diplomatic, and you got a tough job, and you're doing a great job. But let me tell you my thoughts, and you can navigate however you want. This looks as if this is a full-court press by European leaders that want to continue this land and kinetic war in Ukraine and are very mad that President Trump might cut a deal with Vladimir Putin. You got Giorgia Meloni. You have the Germans, you have all the big players of Europe that are in the White House right now that are likely trying to, and Keir Starmer, that are trying to paint a completely different picture and potentially continue this war. You could almost say the European leaders are here to chaperone Zelensky through this entire thing.
What does Zelensky think this deal involves? And we'll see if it does at the end. But I'm just raising the warning because we got to start screaming bloody murder and stop this before Trump agrees to it. In the Hill, what does Zelensky think that this offer entails, the one he's so excited about? Quote, everything, Zelensky said, giving his interpretation of what should be included in the guarantees. Everything could include, Zelensky said, Western troops on the ground, intelligence sharing, and a commitment to deliver military equipment. Now, Trump has said they would buy it. Okay. Nobody at this point anywhere that I can find is saying we'd give it to them. That's not good. And I've had people say, oh, Trump wouldn't do that. Look, I cut and pasted it for you. ABC News. Earlier, Mr. Trump said Europe would, quote, take a lot of the burden under the security guarantees. And he says that in his post on True Social. True, right? So it sounds like there'd be some European troops. But he said America would provide support, and he did not rule out American troops being involved. Zelensky seems to think that's what we're doing. And in USA Today, it flat out says this would mean U.S. troops would guarantee the security. Now, whether they're stationed outside Ukraine waiting to go in, but folks, I'm telling you what, this is why the Euroweenies are so excited. They thought their war was over. And they want World War III. And so they know if the Democrats can get that win in 28, Trump gives them the security guarantee, they're going to fight Russia with our troops, which has been the absolute alpha omega goal from the beginning. They don't want to use their own troops. They hardly have enough troops to fight Russia. Anyway, they just don't. They don't have enough troops for the meat grinder. We're the only ones who do. Watch this, folks. There's a reason I'm bringing this up, and I want to upset you this morning, but I'm telling you what is on the table and why you're going to hear all these clips on talk radio today about how complimentary these European leaders are. At what cost? We need the details, and we need them fast before he agrees to something that we can't take back, that's going to position us even worse than we were before for World War III. It may not happen right near it now, but if Trump goes out that door. Oh, and by the way, why would Trump do this? Because all those military contractors, the ones who provide medevac for the broken bodies, the ones who provide the food supply, the ones who provide the special forces, deniable resources that go in there and get all those multi-billion-dollar Pentagon contracts, they don't have a war right now. And they're going to donate to whoever gives them one. Trump needs the money for the midterms. I hate to be cynical, but if he didn't do this, they'll just write the checks to the Democrats.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.